Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others. Introducing you to wellness professionals ready to assist, inform and inspire. Today's topic is why female serial killers kill for money. My guest is Dr. Mikki Pistorius, South African psychologist, author and criminal profiler with a background in archaeology, speaking from Mauritius. Welcome, Mikki.
Hello, Mariëtte. Thank you very much for having me.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us. Please note that this conversation contains descriptions of violence and is meant for adult listeners. After our conversation, Mikki will tell us something about her we don't know, and then it will be fun question time. Mikki, you and I met years ago when I wrote an article on your bestseller, Catch Me a Killer. I think that was in 2000.
Yes, the book wasn't published in 2000 first. It's now been republished. Yes.
Could you give us an overview of your career, where it started and all the turns it took?
After my degree at the University of Pretoria in languages, I was a journalist for a few years, and I worked for a newspaper and I worked for the SABC. And then from journalist, I went on and I was a public relations officer. And then my husband and I, he was a journalist as well. We moved down to Cape Town. We lived in Cape Town for a while. And then we moved back to Pretoria, and then I enrolled for my honours and my master's degree in psychology because I wanted to be a psychologist. And the moment I got my master's degree, I was immediately appointed in the police as the first profiler in the South African police. I was extremely naive at that stage. I didn't even know the detectives wore plain clothing. And the very next day, I was flown down to Cape Town to start working on the station strangler case. So I was really thrown into the deep end, and that's where it started. And I did that for quite a few years, 6 years, and then I was in the private investigation. And then I resigned from that, and then I joined Sandra Prinsloo, and we were in the television business, writing scripts, etc., because I was originally an author. I've always been an author. That's my first love. And then after that, I went back to private psychology. And from private psychology, one day as well, I was always interested in archaeology and history. So I did an honors degree in archaeology. And then I joined Ancient Origins, which was a website. So I went away from crime, I went away from psychology, and I went into archaeology for a few years. And now I find myself back where I am writing, which is my first love, about crime and psychology, and I blend archaeology. So there's a full circle. It's all coming together. That's where we are at the moment.
Yeah, such a multifaceted career. And that was a very short summary of a very complex career, in fact.
Yes, that's about 30 years.
Yeah.
I'm turning 64 the day after tomorrow.
My goodness, yeah. I'm just before you, a year before you, Mikki. So if it's a competition, I'm winning. Mikki, so many things I want to ask you, but let me start with, for many individuals, merely watching a murder scene in a movie can be traumatic. How did you handle the trauma of your work as a serial killer profiler?
Mariëtte, if you watch a murder scene in the movie, you know, there's... It might not be perfect. So, you know, the director can call cut, and then there's a take two, and the, you know, the actor gets up and they have a coffee and he lies down again. There's no take two on a real crime scene. That's what you have. It's a real life. And a crime scene is literally, it's an onslaught on your senses. If you're watching it in a movie, you can only see it, but you cannot smell it. Mm. There's nothing that smells. You can't hear it. You can't hear maggots eating away at the body. You know, there is the stench of it clings to your skin. So it's real. You know, often when people try and depict it in movies or et cetera, that's what I call synthetic sensationalism. If you see the real thing, you'll never mess around by thinking a skull is funny or, you know, use it as a logo, et cetera. So it's surreal. I tried to handle it. I wasn't very good at it while I was doing it because there wasn't really any time. And I think PTSD encroaches insidiously on your life without you realizing how bad it's getting because it becomes so normal. And eventually, at the end of my career, I seek therapy from a very good therapist. And then I resigned from the police. It was still there, and it took me years, you know, to make peace with it. I'm fine now, you know, and I'm really enjoying my life, but it took a while. So the real thing is very, very different than what you see on the movies.
Yes. How did this work affect your trust in human beings in general?
I profile criminals, all kinds of criminals. So I think it would be a grave mistake if I trust all of them. I wouldn't be able to do my job. However, I'm also a therapist, and I believe in people's ability to grow and to mature and to learn from their mistakes and to change their narratives. And I see this daily in my practice, and that gives me hope. And I think also so many of my social media supporters would tell me their stories in fighting for justice. And every one of us can make a difference to stand up and to be counted. And it's in the small acts every day of people that restore, not that I've really lost my faith, you know, in humankind. It's just, well, obviously I can't trust everybody because then I wouldn't be able to do my job.
You've mentioned that you've come full circle back to criminal profiling as one of the things. And I was wondering how your involvement plays out. Could you say more about that?
I'm no longer feet on the ground, you know, because I'm not at the moment attached to any specific police force, etc. I've lectured at various universities, and I really like that. I've lectured here in Mauritius as well. So I still consult. People would sometimes ask my opinion, and I would give it to them. Or, you know, Mauritius sometimes spoken to the DPP, you know, the public prosecutors, etc. So I am still consulted, but I think mainly I'm using social media, that's the YouTube and my website and my Patreon account, to educate people and to share my knowledge on social media. And I really like that. You know, so that's my involvement at the moment.
We're going to get into more detail about that. I have some questions for you. But first, let's look at our topic, why female serial killers kill for money. And this topic fascinates me because you've linked it to Maslow hierarchy of needs. So even if crime doesn't interest a listener, they will definitely, I think, find some interesting information when we consider Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Can you offer an introduction to this topic and also tell us what inspired your research into the motives of female serial killers?
Yes, I often get the question, you know, what are the differences between male and female serial killers? So there are differences regarding their demographics. There are less female serial killers. They are quiet killers. They're less likely to be detected. They are more inclined to target people that they know, while the males more target strangers. The people they know would be family members or vulnerable people in their care or husbands. They prefer poison as a weapon of choice. Statistically, they happen to be better educated than their male counterparts, but it would be a grave mistake to underestimate a woman's capacity to commit violence and torture. They use firearms and knives, and they can target strangers. I think it started in 1998 when I met Dr. Eric Hickey, and he's a professor at the California State University. He wrote a wonderful book. And he said, to say a woman cannot be a true serial killer unless she acts like a man is myopic. Okay, and he found that 74% of female serial killers are motivated by money. So, wow, to me, this was interesting. My theory said male serial killers are not motivated by financial gain. They may benefit coincidentally from it, but they're motivated by a deep-seated, hidden psychological motive. And it differentiates them from men who commit multiple murders for financial gain, those be assassins or robbers. So I wondered about this thing about the female serial killers. You know, surely money doesn't present itself as an internal need. You know, it's external. And then Dr. Hickey said, no, for some, the need for economic and psychological well-being are virtually the same. So then I started looking at Abraham Maslow, and he gave us the hierarchy of needs. Now, basically, it's five tiers. Our bottom tier is our psychological needs. That would be hunger and warmth and sex in the sense of procreation, etc., and rest. That's the physiological needs. Then the next need would be safety needs, to feel safe. The third one would be belongingness. The fourth one is esteem, how the prestige, etc. And the fifth one is self-actualization. So if I go into them a little bit more in depth, hunger, thirst, sleep, sex is the basic one. And if anybody is deprived of one of these basic needs, then for the rest of their lives, they might be looking for the gratification of it. It will never be enough. They'll never be satisfied. Okay, so the one of safety needs, that is security, stability, dependency, protection, freedom from fear, anxiety, chaos, etc., the need for structure. Now, what I found then is men and women have a very different perspective of money. To women, money gratifies the safety need. Because if you think of it this way, the father is the one, traditionally, that goes out and earns the money. He brings home the bacon, and he sees to her maternal needs. He provides a house and etc. Now, I'm of course not saying women can't do it themselves. Of course they can. You know, but traditionally, it's the father. They're still the daddy warbucks of the world. You know, diamonds are girl's best friend. Mm. So money to a man is the fourth one. The men buy the women jewelry. Why? So that other men can see how well he's looking after her. That's a sign of prestige. Now, should the little girl be rejected or abused in some form or another by the father, abandoned or being raped, etc., that means she experiences a yearning for his love. That's a void inside her, deep inside her. And this can only be filled by money, because money represents his love. And this can be to such an extent that she will kill for it. Maslow says practically everything that looks less important than safety and protection, you know, sometimes even the physiological needs, are underestimated. A man or a woman in this state, if it's extreme enough and chronic enough, may be characterized as living almost for safety alone. So this is what I found with the female serial killers, the majority of them. They kill for money because that basic safety that they needed from the father as a young girl was not there. Now, I'm not saying that single moms need to be worried because there's no father figure, etc. Of course not. There is always some kind of father figure. It can be a grandfather, it can be an uncle, it can be a teacher, etc. Okay. But it's when the girl, I mean, even in families where the mother and the father is married, still the father can be absent or he molests his daughter. And that's what I'm talking about. Her basic safety with him as a protector is broken. And if she reveals the secret, then she also loses love and protection. So she grows up with a total thwarted concept of sexual intimacy and basic deprivation of her security needs. So many female serial killers who have been sexually abused are also promiscuous as well. So Maslow's observation then also sort of dovetails with Carl Jung's description, what he called the Puella syndrome. And that's a woman child who's never really grown up. And she expects men to fit the bill for extravagant expenses and lifestyle. And no matter how much money she gets in a divorce or this or that or whatever, it will never be enough. And if you go back into their history, you will find this, the empty void that the father had left. So that's basically, you know, where the run-of-the-mill female serial killer, if you can call her, comes from. But then you also get the angels of death and the angels of mercy. And people tend to think they're the same, but they are not. The angels of mercy, those are women that kill, normally it's their children, because they believe that the children and themselves would be better off dead. Those are your angels of mercy. And then you get your angels of death, and they usually work in hospitals and etc., and they kill patients or babies, etc., for power. These are your angels of death. At the moment, there's a big case going on in England of one of these women that was convicted, but now, based upon probabilities, how much time she spent at the hospital, they say she might be innocent. I think they're neglecting to look at motive. But that's basically your female serial killers.
So just to recap, you said that single mums need not now worry about their daughters. And I am going to ask you later, but I'd prefer us to follow this conversation first, what the difference is between serial killers and other human beings. So not to generalize and to think that every woman who has this second tier need that remains unfulfilled is going to turn into a serial killer.
No, she won't. Of course not. Because, she can decide, I'm going to make my own money. I'm going to be a successful businesswoman or et cetera. You know, I'm not necessarily going to rely on a man to make it for me, which I think is a very good business plan for every woman, you know, is to sort of earn her own money as well. So definitely not every woman that's been abandoned or this or that or whatever will turn into this.
Yeah.
She'll make her own money. She'll stand on her own 2 feet, which is admirable.
Yes. And Mickey, now we've looked at the second tier of Maslow's hierarchy, which you said is security, which is connected to the motive for the female serial killers. Could you talk about, you mentioned a tier four that's connected to motives for the male serial killers, and is that esteem?
No. The male serial killer would be on the first one. Male serial killers kill for sex.
Oh.
That would be the basic one. So there's usually some kind of sexual motivation because that's very powerful and they can procreate. Okay. So, and there's a thing about life and death when they feel omnipotent. And this is coupled with the testosterone and feeling manly and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the serial killers, Stuart Wilkin, he told us that when he was strangling a woman while he was raping her, the moment that she breathes her last breath would also be the same moment that he could reach, become ecstatic. And he wanted that to coincide because that makes him feel like God. That's an omnipotent feeling. So male serial killers kill for the basic needs, the first one, but female serial killers, the second one, which is also basic. Now regarding, let me just go to the third one. The third one is just that all people need to feel love, okay? And they have to have a family and they need to feel that they belong. So also a sense there when people are rejected or ostracized or bullied, that also enters, which is just recent research that I've done. The fourth one is what I said, the difference there is women think of money as safety. Men think of money as prestige. Okay. In days of yonder, in the old times or whatever, it was how strong they were. That was Achilles, etc.
Yeah, okay? Physically strong.
And the warriors. Yes. Now, if you look today, our powerful men today is Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, etc. They're powerful men of the world because they have money, but we can't say that they resemble Achilles, can we?
Mm.
You know, so it's changed. So money to men is to show other men. It's a benchmark of their masculinity.
And tier five?
And tier five is self-actualization. That is when you become the best person that you can be. That would be people at the top, like Mother Teresa or Gandhi or et cetera. But anybody can obviously strive for self-actualization. It's a desire. Jung said the desire for self-fulfillment. To become the best of your potential. It comes with maturity.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I suppose, need to be a very public display of being your best. It could be anybody in any position.
Yes, yes. Just becoming the real best person that you can be in the end.
Mm. Mickey, is there a case study of a female serial killer that you would like to share?
Yes, I can share. As one, it's happened in Craddock, you know, in the Karoo, okay, very sleepy little town, and this is where Letitia Erasmus operated. Now she was a very demure and a homely woman, okay, but she killed her husband so unobtrusively. Remember, I said female serial killers are quiet killers. So she was a quiet killer. So firstly, she was married to Andre Nell for 31 years, had three daughters, and he was employed by the railways. He was very jovial and popular, etc. But she was dissatisfied. It was never enough. Although he looked after his family very well, she never felt that she had enough money and she always wanted a better life. So there were rumors that she maybe misappropriated funds from her previous job, but in any case, she turned out she's now a housewife. She was trapped in this marriage, and then the doctor prescribed Ativan for her. So she became addicted to the sedatives. Then at the age of about 54, Andre suddenly fell ill. Okay, and the doctor diagnosed a brain disease with symptoms of amnesia and confusion. So then in February 1988, she called the neighbors and she said Andre had shot himself. And the doctor arrived and he noticed that Andre shot himself, but he was shot from the left, although he was right-handed. But he thought he had a tremor and it was possible, etc. But the son-in-law also wondered why would he kill himself with his, you know, his 7.6 pistol when he preferred the 9mm pistol. Anyway, nobody suspected that Jamur depressed little Letitia featured as a husband killer. So she sold the house, she got a lot of money, and she went to Pretoria. 4 years later, she returned. And this time, very much everybody's surprised, she married a retired pensioner who was Petrus Johannes Erasmus. Nobody could understand why, because he was a bit below her status, but she said he had a lot of money. And he was retired. She moved into his house. And, of course, she asked him to change his will in her favor. And they had to go to the bank. And she had to have signing power on his bank account. And eventually, then they married on the 29th of January, 1992. Even on that day, they had to visit the bank to make sure that he changed his will. And then, I think about 21 days later, he died. She shot him. So they arrested her this time on the suspicion of murder. She was taken to Valkenburg, and they said, no, she can stand trial. She went to her daughter in Pretoria while she was awaiting trial. And then she contacted the investigating officer, and she said, no, she had killed Andre because he was sick, and he asked her to. So before this, nobody actually knew that she was the one who pulled the trigger. Then at her trial, the psychologist testified that she had a very low intelligence. She experienced men as dangerous and et cetera. And when they asked her why she killed Petrus, she said she shot him because he tried to rape her. And then the doctor said, no, hang on. Petrus was impotent. He had to give him pills, you know, potency pills, and he was an alcoholic. So he couldn't have raped her. And then the doctor also realized the first husband, Andre's symptoms, was not neurological. It's an overdose of Ativan that he actually prescribed for her. So she was convinced that she wouldn't be found guilty because God had already forgiven her and she would be free. But she was wrong because she found guilty on both murders and she was sentenced to 7 years for the murder of Andre and 12 for the murder of Petrus to be served concurrently. So I think she got off lightly for a serial killer. But I always wonder how many more women like Letitia in sleepy little towns are killing their husbands inconspicuously. And quite recently I did an article about the span of prosecution about in the 1660s in Italy about what they said was a bunch of female serial killers who went around killing their husbands with arsenic poison. But they were not female serial killers because they didn't have this deep motivation. They killed their husbands because their husbands were abusive and Italy was a Catholic state and they couldn't divorce. Mm. So the only way they could get rid of them was to buy poison and poison them.
Goodness.
So there we've got some case studies of your female serial killers. They target husbands mostly.
Yeah. Mickey, now I'm coming to my question. What is the basic difference between serial killers and other human beings?
You know, I often get the stance or the mindset that people say that serial killers are monsters or this or that or whatever. They are not. You know, they're not Marvel comic book heroes. Mm-hmm. They are not monsters. They are ordinary people, very, very, very ordinary people. And people need to understand this. I know they don't want to, but they go to church. They buy groceries. It's your neighbor. It could be your father. It could be the old lady down the lane, etc. So they're very, very ordinary people. Okay, they are definitely not mentally ill. About 1% of them are actually mentally ill. I know people say they must be crazy to do this, but there's a big difference between the later and being crazy or seriously mentally ill. If they are seriously mentally ill, that they did it due to schizophrenia or something, then they would be committed to a psychiatric hospital. But most of them are not, because they're not mentally ill. The main difference there, as I said, there is a very deep-seated psychological motivation. in their subconscious that they themselves are not even aware of, this compulsion to kill. And obviously, they don't have a conscience. And I think that is one of the main differences. Although psychopaths also don't have a conscience. And not all serial killers are psychopaths, and not all psychopaths are serial killers. And there's one thing, you know, that recently have come out that I didn't know years before. Neuropsychologists have done some MRI scans, and they found that when children are being ostracized or bullied, then there's a certain part of the cingulate cortex in the brain that gets damaged. And this is the part of your brain that you use for compassion for other people. So I'd like to put a warning out there to parents, you know, that if your children are bullying other children, then the victim, the children who are being bullied, can grow up one day and kill your children. You know, that sounds very scary, but I hope that can help, that we can really address bullying in school and children being ostracized and rejected and et cetera. I wrote articles about that as well. So basically, the serial killer, there's not much different. They have a very nasty habit of killing people and feeling good about it, lack of conscience, etc. But they are ordinary people. And I think that's a message I need to get across. They're not what they made out in the movies. Definitely not.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za. And it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can share childhood memories with your children or grandchildren, record a bird's eye view of your career or business, or speak about an unforgettable trip. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. Mickey, you've now mentioned articles you wrote, and I've had a look at your Patreon channel where you provide insights into the mind of a serial killer. I was wondering, why are people interested in serial killers, and what do you offer on your Patreon channel?
Yes, I think one of the articles that I also wrote is, you know, why this big interest in true crime, not just in serial killers, but in true crime. And I think one of it might be, wow, I'm not that bad. Other people are that bad. Or could this happen to me? Or what can I do if it happens to me, etc. I think those are some of it. Some people are just fascinated, as I say, by the synthetic sensationalism of it. And that's something that I don't offer on either of my channels. Now, I get many, many questions or requests from people, where can I learn or study to become a profiler? There is a university in Malta. But mostly, the Patreon account, I think it's $5 a month, are for people who are really interested in the criminal mind. And that's where I'll share my experience with you. The YouTube channel is more lightly. I talk about it. But I have an eclectic approach. You know, I incorporate historical facts, mythology, archetypes, anthropology, and all of that in my articles. So I give you a psychological background, you know, of a global perspective of where everything comes from. You know, if we talk about sadism, I will tell you who was the Marquis de Sade. Or we have the dark triad personality, you know, triad. So I will tell you one of them is Machiavellism. I will tell you who was Machiavelli. He happened to be a contemporary of Lucrezia Borgia, who was considered one of the poisoners. He wrote about her brother, Cesare, and he dedicated the book to the father of Catherine de' Medici, who was also a poisoner. You know, so that's how I make links. Hercules killed his wife and his two children, and one of our South African policemen also killed his wife and two children. So I make that kind of connection for you, and I paint a bigger picture. And I think it appeals to the more intellectually minded people that are really seriously interested in the subject without being sidetracked by clickbait, you know, like blood and guts and this and that. So I give you the deep psychology in the Patreon and a lighter version of it in the YouTube. And then the articles are published on the website.
Yeah, and Patreon also has articles, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, Patreon. The articles are, you know, you can either read it, as you know, or you can listen to, you know, listen and watch the videos. Mm-hmm. So you can read the article, the same article as thing where I also present it in a video form.
What I'll do is in the podcast notes, I'm going to put links to your Patreon and to your and to your YouTube channels. The YouTube one, just for the listeners, is called Mickey Pistorius, Profiler on Record. And then I've wanted to ask you for a long time, your book, Catch Me a Killer, was turned into a TV series. How did you experience this?
Yes, it was, you know, 5 years ago we started talking and I sold the rights. It was quite an experience. I mean, my character is played by Charlotte Hope, who is a wonderful actress, and she completely got me. She is fantastic. She's just great. So she got me. I don't know if anybody watches it in South Africa. I think it's available on Showmax. It's weird seeing yourself being played. They got a lot of it right. Some of it they didn't, you know, because there was a bit of poetic license, et cetera, as they say. And that's actually what inspired me to start the YouTube channel, because it was the only platform where I could tell people the truth. You know, somewhere in the series they have somebody shooting me in the hand. That never happened. I've never been shot in the hand. You know, they were hearing the things that I felt the public should know the truth. It was interesting to me as well because the new generation didn't know about the book. You know, so, and we reprinted the book. It's now out as well. So, yes, I enjoyed the experience. I think it was very good for the South African film industry. It was received very well, and it's now streaming all over the world. It inspired the YouTube channel. It's all coming together, and I just think Charlotte is great. She's fantastic.
Where can listeners learn more about your work?
They can go to the YouTube channel, you know, the website, the Patreon, or they can buy the books. I've written 7 books. Catch Me a Killer was my autobiography. And then there's one in Afrikaans called Skimmer Niskadi. And I wrote a book about fatal females. So this year I'm focusing more on the female criminals. And I wrote Profiling Serial Killers and Other Crimes. And then I've also written a novel, Sorg, about the Oudtshoorn Pharaoh. And we're also seeing if we can turn that into a TV series.
Oh, good, because that's my favorite book.
Yes, I also like it. It's the only one that I wrote that's a novel, but I loved it. And then I also wrote a book called Heroes, Men's Perspective on Relationships. And this happened when, in my practice, you know, most of my clients were men because I worked in the police. So they're not all policemen, but men came. And I could really understand them given the background of the work that I did. And then I thought, women don't really understand men. And I think you've written about this as well, you know, and I wrote Heroes. So at the moment, I'm working on a course for a rescuer, somebody with the archetype of a rescuer, you know, to become a hero again. And also for the help for the women, you know, the Black Widow or the Puguela, et cetera, the damsel in distress. So that I'm trying to put into a course that somebody can buy.
That sounds very promising. And yeah, Heroes and Warriors, that is a very unusual book. I have an Afrikaans and an English article on my website where I spoke to you about this topic. And I must tell you, Mickey, that I know you say that, of course, when you talk about men and women, you generalize. One can't help doing that. But that book of yours has changed my attitude to such a huge extent. And very often it helps me with relationships. So thank you very much for that one.
It's a pleasure. It helps me too. You know, because sometimes I even need to remind myself, go read the book, Mickey. So it helps me too.
And I'd really like to use this moment to ask you just to tell the readers about Sorg, what you wrote about there, because it has a lot of depth.
Yes, yeah, Sorg is a story basically about the Oudtshoorn ostrich feather era. But it starts, you know, when the creator created animals and people and et cetera, and he had some pieces left and he was tired at the end of the day, and then he created the ostrich. And he put the ostrich in the Karoo. And then he created the Khoisan, and they were there too. And then, you know, the people arrived then, they set up a little town, and then they started breeding the ostriches. And during that time, a handful of good feathers could make you extremely rich. And Oudtshoorn was the first town that had electricity all over the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, dancers from France and Paris were imported to dance there. It was a beautiful place, all due to these ostriches. And then in my storybook, one of the original Khoi women, you know, she saw the ostrich and she picked a feather from him because it was so beautiful, and he was angry at her and he killed her. And then her husband killed, you know, the bird with a poisonous arrow. And then he took the blood of his wife, the blood of the ostrich and poison, and he painted this ostrich picture in the back of a cave. But the cannabis, you know, the cannabis grew in front of the cave. So the ostrich came alive. And then he's this mythical figure looking out over the Karoo and the ostriches, which are his children. He doesn't like the people being, you know, abusing them. And then the story goes, it starts, you know, with the Klein Karoo Fierce, and there is this archaeologist who is looking for this cave of the famous ostrich painting that he can't find. And there's a lady, and she's an artist, she's a painter. And then it jumps back in time to this man who had the farm, and he had the wife, Isabella, and he had a son with her, but he also had Eva Damon, and she worked for them, you know, and he had a son with her. And he gave her a pair of ostriches, which had fantastic plumes. And she invested that money into the Barney Bernardo diamonds, and she became very, very rich. And then, of course, the war came and everything crashed. So there was no money left. And she bought some of his farm, you know, her ex-lover, to save him. And she moved up into this mountain, into this cave, where she's also sitting. And then we go back to the modern times, and the archaeologist, the man, climbs up the mountain and he finds her, Eva, and she's sitting there and she tells him her story from her perspective. And the painter girl, she lives in one of these guest houses in Oudtshoorn, and she meets the ghost of Hendrik van der Westhuizen, who tells her his story from his side. And then the story runs, and it runs through the Boer War and et cetera until modern times. And then, that's the story. So it's historical, it's mystical. It's humorous, and it's just a very wonderful story, and I think it would make a fantastic TV series.
It would.
Although everybody says it's expensive because it's period drama, and I hope they come to the party or we'll have to go overseas.
Yeah, you've now explained it so quickly, but there's so much to that story. How, for our English listeners, would you translate the Afrikaans word sorg?
I think it's providence. In a sense, in English, you know, we are looking at translating it for, you know, for a TV series, and then it's called Plumes. It's sort of providence, you know, looking needs, you know,
and caring for,
yeah, you know, but the appreciation is in our eye of the woman for the man, not necessarily in the diamonds or etc. You know, so that's all there. but it's full of ghosts. It's lovely. You know, during the Karoo festival, the man can see the ghosts. And he thinks these are just children dressed up in fancy costumes. But they're the old school children of the old school, you know, which is now another building. And the girl as well, she's standing in this guest house, looking at the framed photographs on the wall and wondering about stuff. And at some time she said something aloud. And the guy standing next to her says, no, it wasn't like that. It's like that. And she talks to him. And then suddenly she realizes, but she's talking to a ghost because it's her ancestor. And as these two walk through the town, all the ghosts in the different buildings are very excited because they have the blood, you know, they have the ancestral blood. And I did a lot of research in the town and on all the old buildings that are still there and those that have been demolished. So historically, I spent a lot of time there. I got my names from the graveyards and etc. I did a lot of work on the ostrich farms to learn about ostrich farming and the eggs and etc. So there's a lot that went into the book. But in the end, I think it's fun. It's a great story. It's a saga.
Yes, so I'll hold thumbs for the TV series. And I'll also hold thumbs that one day that book will be translated into English. So our English-speaking listeners can read it.
That would be great. That would be great. And we can hold thumbs that we might make another series of the Mickey Pistorius Profiler. We're looking at that.
Now, Mickey, it's time for you to tell us something we don't know about you.
I can't cook.
Ah.
I really, really can't cook. I'm terrible. I mean, the other day I got an air fryer because everybody says that's a wonderful thing to have, and it is. But I took it in twice because I thought it wasn't working. And the only reason was I couldn't find the on buttons.
Oh, no.
To teach me how to use. Most of the food now that I eat is raw because it's good for you, and I eat brain food, you know, so it's very easy for me to eat arrows and raw veggies and stuff and et cetera. It's very easy on this island as well with the fruit and everything. But I really, really, really can't cook.
And may I ask you a fun question?
Yes.
If a time machine, Mickey, could take you to ancient Greece, which I know you love, would you like to live in that civilization as a man or a woman, and why?
I think, to answer your question, I think I did live in that civilization, but I think I have quite an affinity for Calypso. And Calypso was a sorceress goddess who lived on the island of Aegygia. And this is where Odysseus, after the Trojan War, he landed up there with his shipwreck and everything. And he lived for quite a few years with her on this island. And at the moment, I'm also living on an island. So I don't know when Odysseus is going to arrive back. I don't think he ever died. I think he's still time traveling somewhere. You know. But I wrote this very interesting thing as well. You know, imagine Odysseus is coming back finally to his wife, Penelope, on Ithaca. Okay. Now, the thing is, he's got post-traumatic stress because he's been in a war for 10 years. Penelope has been ruling that island. He comes back as a beggar. She has all these suitors in the hall, you know, wanting to marry her. This irritates him. He takes his bow and his arrow and he kills all of them and the maids. And she thinks, and who do you think is going to clean up this mess? Because you killed the maids. And you know, they might go to bed, okay, which he might, he's got PTSD. He hasn't seen her in 20 years. He's old, she's old, etc. So I don't think he's homecoming. He was away 10 years. He spent most of that on an island with another woman. I mean, really. So I think the best thing that he could have done is leave the island. And then Penelope could have justifiably ruled the island as the queen. So I have a good understanding of people of that time. Now, I would definitely, if I were in that stage, I would be a woman, but I would have been a warrior queen.
Very suitable. Thank you, Mickey. It was so interesting to talk to you. And I'm very glad I could finally ask you some of the questions I've been wishing to ask. And good luck with what you are doing. We'll definitely be watching this space.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. I thought I'm coming to Mauritius to retire, but I'm more busy than anything.
And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. Please subscribe to this podcast series where you download your podcasts And if you found this episode insightful, do share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.